All right, folks, thanks for joining us. Friday is upon us, and it's always a joy to start out the show with our hometown hero brought to you by Marigolds. We got Anthony on the line. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, Justin.
How you doing this morning?
Pretty good, man. Pretty good. How about yourself?
I'm good. Can't complain. I was waking up going, I hope there's not going to be a bunch of snow on the ground. So, you know, that's a win.
Yeah, for sure.
There you go. So, Anthony, tell us a little bit about what branch you served in and why you got into the military.
Sure. I served in the Air Force. And for me personally, I didn't have a history of it in my family. But ended up actually a friend of mine ended up kind of linking up with a recruiter who I had a chance to speak with, and I thought it just provided me the best opportunity coming out of high school.
That's great. And where were you? What state were you located in when you enlisted?
I was in Wisconsin when I enlisted.
There you go. So you know all about the cold weather.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is a lovely place to be. From being from some time in Minnesota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin, Colorado's definitely the best.
There you go. That's funny. So how long were you in for?
I did 4 years, and I was actually stationed in North Dakota for those 4 years.
Jeez, in North Dakota, huh? Wow, you paid your dues.
You could say that, for sure.
That's great. And what's one thing you took away from being in the military?
Well, it's one of the best decisions I've made. One of the things I remember particularly is the basic training part of it gives you kind of this added ability to push through obstacles, something that I think sometimes people have a little trouble with because you don't really have an option. They say to go forward, you have to go forward. And then the position that I worked as an aircraft electrician, troubleshooting was a part of that. So some creative thinking and troubleshooting are things that I found benefiting me long after my career.
That's great. Well, hey, the folks over at Marigolds are going to reach out to you, you and a guest, you know, whoever you want to bring. They're going to take care of your dinner, drinks, desserts, just as a thank you from our community for you, your family's sacrifice for our great nation.
That's amazing. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
Yeah, you got it, Anthony. Thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend, okay?
Will do. Talk to you later, Justin.
All right. Take care. All right, folks, stick around. We got Tim Lee in next. We're going to talk a little bit of commercial real estate, and we're going to talk a little bit of politics. I know you're probably hearing so many political ads, but we're going to chalk it up for you here on The Extra. We'll be back after these messages. All right, folks, thanks for sticking with us. We got Tim Lee on the air. He's real estate guru, commercial. You see his signs all over the place. And Tim, thanks for joining us.
Hey, you're welcome. Glad to come in.
Yeah, you got it. And we're going to save the second half where we talk politics.
Well, so the fun stuff.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to offend anyone on the first segment. How about that?
We'll save it to, yeah. Well, if I go out every day and I'm not offending somebody, then I'm not taking a position on anything. So there is that.
There you go. So, you know, I turn on the news this morning. I'm walking the treadmill. I got Fox Business on and they're freaking out with the banks and, you know, some of those collapsing, and you start to think real estate and people get nervous. What are you kind of seeing in the commercial market here in the Springs?
Well, so right now, I mean, we think that the commercial market's still steady. Obviously, Colorado Springs has a pretty strong military presence, and so we drive a lot of our growth city product through businesses and government and stuff that is, you know, kind of almost like the worse the world gets, the better and safer Colorado Springs looks. And so our inventory in the commercial end of the business is still tight. We're still seeing prices remain pretty static to not declining, but not rapidly increasing. Obviously, everything is being impacted by interest rates, and that's not really keeping people from wanting to purchase, but it is limiting what banks will lend, which is a different way of thinking about it. So a bank will come in and say, well, at that interest rate, you qualify for X, but at that other interest rate, you don't qualify for that. And so that has some impact on buyers and what they can buy. But we're really seeing inventory as tight as I've ever seen it in 40 years of doing this. Transactionally, I think this month, my daughter, who's my sales partner, she and I will probably do six or seven commercial building sales this month, which we think is pretty strong. You know, last year we did $60 million between the two of us, which was not horrible, and we were on track to probably do that this year as well. So we don't really see a slowdown. And we're taking advantage of the perceptions in the market where there's a lot of fear to really try and find stuff for us to buy for our own portfolios. So we think this is a great opportunity for people that are able to operate without fear and just get out and do the digging and do the looking and find opportunity in the marketplace.
Yeah, and that's what it is. It's Warren Buffett says, right? When other people are fearful, be greedy. When other people are greedy, be fearful.
Yeah.
Right? And well, so that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, you buy in fear and you sell in hysteria. So, yeah. I mean, that's, yeah, exactly. And
you make your money on the buy.
100%. You know, I like to teach our brokers that, you know, bought right is half sold, which is a great thing. It was taught to me by some old guy about 150 years ago, right? But, you know, back in, so this is a benefit of having gray hair and been through a few cycles, but in probably 2009 and 10, I think we were buying warehouse buildings for $35 a square foot. Today, I know Hammers Construction is building new product, their metal buildings, probably like 5,000 square feet on a half acre, for example, $250 a square foot. And you could sell them all day long. And so that's that metric of measuring price per square foot from 35 to 250, that's an indication of where our market has gone. Now, the question is that sustainable? And the answer is we have a lot of people from outside our market who want to come to Colorado Springs and operate their businesses here because our bureaucratic limitations are minimal compared to, like, say, for example, California. In California,
they got some red tape in California there?
A little bit, not much. Guy told me it would take him 2 to 3 years to get a permit to build a building and probably 7 lawsuits along the way. I mean, how does that make any sense, right?
Yeah, the weather doesn't pay off when you're doing that.
Yeah, the weather can't be nice. You know, you can always go to a tanning bed, you know, get California suntan, you know. We think that the market's strong. We think it's going to continue to be strong, and we're very bullish on Colorado Springs and along the Front Range. I do get very concerned about housing prices because I think they've gotten away from the average person because the cost of a house compared to our median income in Colorado Springs is out of whack. And I think there's going to have to be a settlement there. But with respect to commercial, we don't feel that impact because the commercial transaction is based on commerce. And it's based on I need a space to do my business and my business is going to make X number of dollars and my business generating those dollars is able to afford, you know, some subset for their real estate.
Yeah, I mean, we saw on the residential side, things get out of whack, and now we've seen them come down. You mentioned good buys. You know, I worked my first foreclosure deal in, 3 or 4 years just last week. So we're starting to see some of those good buys as well, but things got up so high. It's almost like gas, right? Yep. They put gas up so high, now you're like, I'm getting it for $375. This is a great buy. It's funny how the consumer mind works. But tell us where the tighter inventory is it industrial, and then you're seeing more inventory in office, and how that happened through COVID, and I mean, just describe that a little bit for us.
Well, let's go to COVID, for example. Well, first of all, let's go back and talk about Hoff and Lee's premise. Okay, so our company premise, since we founded the company in 1987, and the idea was to not compete with all the really big national firms, and so like the CB Richard Ellis's and, you know, Coldwell Bankers and all those guys. So Hoff and Lee's specialty is we focus on the bottom 90% of the commercial real estate market. And that is the part of the market that where the buildings are owned by mom, pa, kettle, or, you know, the average Joe. We have the capability and the skills to sell the tall buildings downtown, but we don't because they don't trade often enough. And so if you think about our market, which are local people, COVID didn't really impact us. In our entire system, I think we had one COVID casualty, and it was a beauty salon. And we actually gave her free rent through COVID, and then she came back and couldn't make it. And so that was our only casualty. But all of our apartments stayed full, our commercial buildings stayed full, and all that stuff, because there were local people dealing in the local economy. And so they weren't really as impacted as, you know, some of the national brands would have been. And where we're seeing a lot of vacancy, where you hear about like maybe office building vacancy, that's not with like local properties. That's like with, again, you know, the really big buildings up on I-25 where you have national accounts in there, where maybe they've downsized by 30 or 40% or something. You know, think about like Silicon Valley laying off like 3 zillion people, you know, or whatever. Those are the kinds of businesses that impact vacancy rates, but they don't really impact the average Joe or mom, pa, kettle. So we really haven't seen that kind of a vacancy. In terms of tight inventory, it's across the board. I mean, I have an office building that I sold, less than 12 months ago for $1.9 million. We're remarketing it for $2.5 million. And we've had many people looking at it. We don't have any fish yet, but we'll probably land one in the boat before long. That's an indication, not that the building is terrific, but it's a good location. It's an indication that there's no fish under the ice. I mean, there's just no buildings for sale. It's even exacerbated in the industrial sector because industrial buildings are just in high demand because you have last mile delivery systems now. You have everybody who wants to start a business needs a place to go do the business, and typically they go to an industrial building. Retail is an animal all by itself. I don't delve much in retail. Those are pretty much national accounts. But, you know, by all indication, retail is strong. What I think is interesting is how bifurcated retail is across the city. So, for example, if you go north on Academy and cross the street at Woodman, rent rates will probably increase $10 to $15 a square foot. So it's really micro market centric. And so retail out on Powers is strong. Retail in areas where you'd expect retail to be strong, they are strong. And then areas where you would expect retail to not be great, it's not great, you know, because it's just a crummy location.
Yeah.
And then what you see with a lot of those retail buildings is they get reconfigured for other purposes. And so, like, you know, I noticed up at Chapel Hills Mall, you know, you got apartment buildings being constructed. Well, imagine the Citadel Mall if they just said, you know, what the heck with the Citadel Mall? We don't need a firing range anymore. Let's just turn the whole thing into housing. You know, so maybe they'll do, maybe it'd be housing for people who carry guns. I don't know. You know, so it's just a repurpose and it's a natural kind of ebb and flow of the market.
Yeah, no, I believe in that totally because really it's kind of been abandoned. And they, at least the one good thing, they put Caperna in the charter school. I mean, that's a good use of the space there. The big box malls, they just have to be, you know, redone. And unfortunately, the one at the Citadel is owned by New York investors, from my understanding, and they own a bunch of malls, and they're not
locally.
They
will go broke eventually, and I could show you if we had more time. But, you know, all these national real estate people do their stuff with other people's money. It's all about pushing rates higher and then capitalizing that increased income, and it's all trading, you know, bonds and, you know, notes and debts and all that stuff. And you can see it kind of feather through the banking system where a lot of that debt, nobody even knows who's carrying some of the debt, you know, and the guarantees, the credit swaps and all the different kind of, you know, super cool terminology. The average person hasn't got a clue what's going on, but the banking system is in trouble. When you have a banking system in trouble like we have, the people who own the Citadel Mall are in trouble. I will guarantee you they're in deep trouble. They're probably just not talking about it. I'll also guarantee you that you give me 2 or 3 years and that mall's owned by somebody else. Guarantee it. No question in my mind.
Yeah, they're high leverage guys. And, you know,
100%.
You talk about your company. It sounds like, hey, we're going to hit base hits. We're not going to try to hit home runs. We put enough base hits together. We win the game.
We're the Pete Rose without the gambling.
Yeah. I love Pete Rose.
I love Pete Rose too. But, you know, hey, the guy was just ahead of his time, right? Because now they all gamble.
I know.
You know, you imagine Pete Rose today? He'd be on the gamblers' commercials on TV, right?
Yeah, I'm surprised he hasn't gotten any auditions yet.
He probably, he should. He totally got shafted.
That's funny. So we got about a minute left here, and we're going to talk politics because you served
time
on city council.
I served time.
Yeah. And we're in the heat of it now. I've never seen a mayor's race. We had so many candidates out there. It's obviously going to go to a runoff. And want to pick your brain about, you know, when we come back after the messages, about your time serving on there, what you've learned, what you feel like a good vision for the Springs is, and, you know, your take on some of the candidates.
I'd be happy to talk about that. You know, you hit the nail on the head in terms of vision. The problem with all of the candidates is that none of the candidates have a stated vision.
Yeah,
you know, they're what I like to call rumpled shirts. And, you know, you get to pick which is the least rumpled of the rumpled shirts. And that's who you're going to get to have as an elected official. So,
yeah, you get the same type of garden from each person. You know, that
I care about the city. I got experience, you know, but there's the problem with Colorado Springs is we're a city of leaders with no leader.
Yeah.
And truly, because we have a lot of really bright people that do really well. But there's nobody that's really been able to galvanize those that intellectual capital and push it in one direction. And, you know, you can't go in there and be a leader and have your call to action be that I can run the bureaucracy. I mean, that's not inspiring.
Yeah.
So right now, unfortunately, I don't feel like there's any inspirational candidate for any elected position right now. And that statement's going to get me in a lot of trouble. But
that's great. We got the radio listeners fired up. You know, it's Friday. They feel good.
I can tell them who to vote for.
At least it's St. Paddy's Day. They can go have some beers.
I'm running for dog catcher. They should vote for Tim Lee for dog catcher.
I love it. All right, folks, this next segment's going to be exciting. ABC News is going to chime in. Then we're back with Tim Lee, served on city council. You're listening to Justin Hermes on The Extra. All right, folks, thanks for hanging with us. We were chatting it up there. I was telling Tim, I just said, you know, let's just make sure we don't use any profanity. I don't want to get in trouble here.
Soil my mouth.
So anyway, I think we just start off with mayor. There's so many people running for mayor in itself, and then you got city council in there as well. But I would mention some of the top names. You can tell me if I'm wrong. Sally Clark. I think I'd even put Tig in there. Yemi. Lojinos Gonzalez, and you got Wayne Williams, Sally Clark.
Let me just stop you. Okay, so first of all, I was going to be a candidate for mayor.
Yeah.
And I put out a call to my readers. You know, I write Tim Lee's Market Report.
Yeah, I read it.
I put out a call, and I said, if I can raise $150,000 from when I put the call out, which is on Thursday afternoon to Friday afternoon, then I would run for mayor. And I raised $80,000 in about 2 hours, and I was kind of on track. And I didn't finally run because I had a couple of the big constituent groups tell me they were supporting either Wayne or Sally, right? Yeah. And so I decided at that point it would be really disingenuous for me to take friends' money and, you know, put it up for a campaign that I felt like was a loser. So I didn't run. But what you have to understand is that all the names, you have 12 names in a hat, there's probably three people who are legitimate. With all due respect to the other candidates, that's the reality. So we talk about the reality of life. That's what it is. You got Wayne versus Sally versus Yemi. And so you have, you know, Wayne is basically, you know, the legacy of Southers and is tied to that money. And you have Sally, who is, you know, kind of the disruptor, and she's tied to her money. And then you have Yemi, who, you know, says he's the every man for everybody. And the problem with Yemi is he has, like, no real experience in that kind of a high-level position. So in my opinion, he'd be the least qualified. He's a great guy. I love Yemi, but I just don't believe he's got the chops for that job yet. Maybe in the future, but not this time around. So then if you say that about Yemi, then you're left with Sally and Wayne. And people are beating on Wayne because they say that he's in the pocket of, you know, the Norwood Development Group, right? Well, whoever gets in that chair is going to be in somebody's pocket because they got to raise probably $1 million. And so to say Sally won't be in somebody's pocket is a pretty disingenuous statement. So you got to figure out, okay, do you want the existing kind of infrastructure, you know, bureaucrat and all that kind of stuff that's there, or do you want change? And that's really the decision, because you're going to have a person at the top who's going to have a constituent group that she or he is beholden to. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, I think this election, you know, is going to be a runoff. And, you know, it's like, whoever gets elected, if they have a conservative bent to them, hopefully, because I'm a conservative, obviously, then probably the final analysis isn't going to really impact the individual, you know, the Joe Blow on the street. You know, okay, the government's the government, not a heck of a lot you're going to do about it, and so you just hope they don't run the city into the ditch, right? What I think's lacking from any of the candidates, and I've told all of the candidates I've talked to, I said, what's your inspirational message? I mean, why do you really want to run? What's your passion? Why do you need that seat? And I actually, when I was thinking about running, I had passion and I needed the seat to, you know, work on some of my homelessness solutions. But that's the question I think needs to be asked is, what's your passion? Why do you need the seat? Why can't you solve the problem that you see trying to be a city leader from the side? Why do you absolutely need to be the mayor in order to solve that problem? What's that problem for you as an individual? And I think if you ask each of the candidates that, you're not going to get an answer that really flips your switch, and that's that lack of leadership and the lack of direction. So they're all nice people, and I hope they all do well. I voted for Tom Strand, and everybody says, why? And I voted for Tom Strand because I told him I would. Tom Strand has zero chance of being elected, but Tom Strand's one of the finest gentlemen, one of the finest people in the whole cast of candidacy. And he actually would be a really good mayor. So that's my spin on the mayor's race.
Yeah. All right, folks, quick commercial break. We'll be back in a minute here. We're going to keep talking politics. You're listening to Justin Hermes on The Extra. All right, folks, thanks for sticking with us. Talking with Tim Lee, former city council member. And the biggest thing I took away from just chatting with Tim here now is whoever wins you don't, it doesn't affect you if you have the right mindset and you're moving forward. You know, it's not a good mindset to be in of, hey, my world is going to live and die on who's the mayor of Colorado Springs.
100%. You know, I mean, I think, you know, the great thing about Colorado Springs is this is a very entrepreneurial community. There is opportunity for anybody who wants to take it. And the mayor's, whoever sits in that seat is not going to denigrate from that opportunity. Whoever gets in that seat, generally speaking, has all said that they were going to try and trim the bureaucracy, which would be a good thing. And that basically gets back to the housing industry. And if they can trim the bureaucracy, the idea would be that less bureaucracy, less cost per house. And so it would be better for consumers. Who knows if that happens? Because, you know, the kind of the way you look at it is, let's say they could trim the bureaucracy so much that you could drop $20,000 off the price of a house, for example, right? Well, then let's say that the cost of lumber and materials goes up, and it's like for the average guy, just forget about it. You know, go about your business and you know, vote prudently for who you want, you know, that's kind of ideologically aligned with you. But the actual person who wins the election in a community like Colorado Springs, I don't think over the next 4 years is going to change dramatically the trajectory of the city.
No, I don't think so either. And the big thing is I think we're going to see more growth, actually. You know, we're projected to have 1.2 million people in El Paso
County
by 2050. But as crummier as, you know, a Denver gets, more people are coming out of Denver.
But so you know, they say we have 40,000. There's a pent-up demand for like 40,000 housing units. There might be the demand, but who says that we have to satisfy the demand? I mean, at some point, do we just grow for the sake of growth? Or do we say, hey, let's put the curb on that? And I'm not advocating a position. I'm just posing a question. Just because they say there's a 40,000 deficit, who says we have to rush out and do things that are not well-timed, either with respect to water or infrastructure or public safety, just to build 40,000 units because there's 40,000 people that say they want to come here? We have what we have. We have a police department that can't respond to calls. Yep. We have deficient water supplies because that's indicated because I can't water my lawn every day a week, right? Or the prices go up. We have a homeless problem that's not going away anytime soon, and that's part and parcel of a growing city. So, you know, why should we just, because we have this claimed demand, rush out to try and figure out how can we satisfy that demand? Because just by doing that, ideologically, you have a few people that are going to make billions of dollars, and the rest of us is just going to impact us. So maybe what we ought to do is sit back a little bit and say, take a breath and say, maybe we don't need to have 40,000 housing units. Maybe we need to figure out how to run what we have better now. And as we can grow reasonably, we grow that way. And maybe we grow 20,000 instead of 40,000. And some people don't get to come here. You know what? Okay, go to Pueblo, stay in Denver. You know, there's other places people can live.
Yeah, so. I do think we're going to attract more people, though, as you know, you see everything going on in Denver and the exodus of downtown and the commercial real estate.
Well, so let me.
People are trying to get out of that.
And let me, you know, politically, let's talk about jobs for a second and say, okay, what are the candidates' positions on jobs? Because unless you can get better paying jobs here, here's a scenario somebody posed to me the other day. I thought was really interesting. What if the big shots in Denver or around the globe who want to locate to Colorado decide that Pueblo, Colorado's got more water, it's way less costly to build and develop, and Colorado Springs becomes nothing more than a bedroom community like Castle Rock? And so what's that do for your, you know, your tax base, you know, your employment base? And so they fly over Colorado Springs and go land in Pueblo and build out down there. So there's some real interesting conversations that have to go on at a high level. And I think the one that's missing from the local election right now is this whole focus on jobs and what the new elected crop is going to do to try and promote Colorado Springs. It brings more jobs to the community.
Yeah, because when you look at the increase in housing, even rental rates, and you look at the salaries and average pay, it doesn't keep up at all. But I do have to question, you talk about building these new homes, you're getting a 1,600 square foot home on slab for $500,000, and the property taxes are $4,000 a year. For a veteran, that's a payment of like $3,000 a month. Why aren't we building more condos? I mean, why aren't we building more townhouses where there's more affordability? Because that's the tough thing when I hear
that's a state level issue, because you have you know, liability issues that are torn to the developer with condos and that kind of stuff. So
the 10-year.
Back in the day, there were a couple of smart lawyers who figured out, hey, let's go to the legislature get a law passed and, you know, create this contingent liability, and then we can go around and sue people and make a boatload of dough, which at the end of the day, that's what it gets down to, is somebody's making money on somebody. And that's how a lot of this
politics. But you can do townhouses.
Yeah.
You can do townhouses, and I just think the argument for affordability is kind of silly when that's a $3,000 payment a month for a veteran to buy a new house that's offered out in the community right now. So I think you're right. You kind of say, what's the need for all this growth? And rental rates are actually coming down right now. Sales prices are coming down. The market can correct itself.
So one of the things that I think is a horrible thing that's occurring right before our very eyes is all the development going on the west side of Colorado Springs and all the open space. And if you go within a mile of Centennial and Fillmore, for example, and look at the hundreds and hundreds of units, one of the things that the city leaders aren't considering is that the traffic impact and the cost. And so let's say you have, 2,000, for example, new units, whether they be houses, townhouses, or apartments. Because they all cost so much, you're going to have two to three people in each of those units, each person with a car with no employment on the west side of I-25. So they're going to have to go under or over the interstate twice a day to go to work. And so when you talk about housing, jobs, affordability, all that stuff, we also have to talk about infrastructure and the fact that our infrastructure isn't designed to accommodate housing density the way that it's currently being deployed in Colorado Springs, especially on the west side.
Yeah, infrastructure has always been a battle. It does seem like we're always lagging 10, 15 years. We're playing catch up, and you see other cities who are planning ahead,
right?
They're building out 20 years or so. I talked about areas in Arizona, Sun City, Glendale, and it's beautiful the way they've developed it, and their road system is phenomenal.
Well, let me digress. I'm being sensitive to your time, but digress for 1 second and talk about the city council election.
Yeah.
So one of the things I would encourage anybody who is paying attention to city council is to actually think about the larger issue. When you elect a city councilor, that's almost like monkey business, because the real election isn't for city council. It's for who's going to sit on the board of directors of the Colorado Springs Utilities Company. So budget comparison, the budget that the city councilor is in charge of is about one-third the budget that they'd be in charge of at the utilities company. Arguably, that utilities company has a greater impact on the city than the municipal budget that the city councilors take charge of. So when you think about that, you have to think about, is this person got the capacity to understand, you know, big numbers, big company, that kind of stuff, and implications of water and energy and, you know, just resources like that. So when I think about city council, I don't think about city council per se. In fact, I've always said that the election's backwards. We should be electing board members for the utilities company. And, oh, by the way, you have this other part-time hustle, which is to take care of city council.
You're totally right, especially with the rise in utility rates. And we talk about affordability. I don't know anybody whose utility bill hasn't doubled in the last couple of years.
Well, I know the CEO at the utilities company, and I will vouch for him as being probably of the last three utilities CEOs. He's the best guy. He's got common sense. He's a combat leader in real battle. And I think he's going to be a terrific asset for the community. But all that being said is people don't even think about the utility company. They think about city council, and they think about potholes and dog catchers and, you know, monkey business. What they should be thinking about is a $1.5 billion enterprise and who we're having sit on those seats directing operations at the utilities company.
Yeah, I mean, it's vastly important. It's the biggest thing when we talk about inflation, people leave that out. People like talk about groceries. Look at the utility bills. And I'm glad to hear you say that, because I do think, you know, we need to really pivot, because stuff has become very unaffordable on the utility side.
And so in Denver, there's a rule in Denver that says any retrofit or new construction for commercial real estate starting in 2025 has to be all driven by electricity, no more gas. And so one of the questions you'd have to ask is, first of all, how affordable is that? And then second of all, does the electric grid system have enough power to support going all electric? And so if you say if it's going to happen in Denver, can that happen in Colorado Springs? Well, if you elect a city council that leans to the left, a little more liberal orientation and green orientation, that pushes philosophically and ideologically Colorado Springs Utilities in that direction too fast. And all of a sudden we have a big city and power problems that we don't necessarily need to have if we are a little bit more judicial, if we have a little bit more conservative mindset on council and then on the utilities board.
Yeah, all good points. We're about to close out the segment here, but Tim, we're going to get you back in because it'll be a runoff. I'd like to have you back in when we see the final two candidates.
Always going to be entertaining.
You know, we can chat a little bit more about it, but the utility thing is a huge point, and appreciate your knowledge on the real estate and the politics and coming in today.
My pleasure to come in. Thank you very much.
All right, folks, that's a wrap for The Extra. Thanks for tuning in. You got Tom Martino joining you next.